Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio. Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Hi, this is Mark O'Connell, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and joining me on the show today, I have two guests. They are researchers and investigators from Norway, with a wealth of experience behind them involved with the fascinating Project Hestalen. I'd like to welcome Fred Paulsen and Erling Strand. How are you both?
Fine.
Great.
Awesome. Listen, I've not had two guests on at the same time for a while. So what we'll do first, Fred, we'll bring in you if you want to give a quick introduction of yourself to the listener, and then we'll bring in Erling and we'll chat through the format. How does that sound?
Let's go.
On you go, Fred.
Well, you said that I have a wealth of experience. No, I started this a year and a half about now. I found out that Project Hestalen needed some attention, and I joined. And shortly after, they voted for me to become the CEO of this project. So that's interesting. I am a software developer. That's what I do. I like to work with front-end development. So I thought at least I can work on the web page and whatever is needed in the back-end of databases and so on, and to get people into this project. So that's my role, more the administrative part.
I was being generous, Fred, then. I think I meant a wealth of experience between you both. But I think when I say that, we're relying heavily there on the decades of experience that Erling brings. And Erling, that leads us on to yourself, Erling. Do you want to discuss a little bit about yourself and your work?
Yes, I've been working as an assistant professor at the Østfold University College for many years. In this topic, I was part of the organizing committee, or those founders, in fact, of Project Hestalen back in 1983. It was based on the huge amount of sightings of strange phenomena in a small Norwegian valley called Hestalen. It's located in the middle part of Norway, not so that far from Trondheim city. This small valley, only 10, 15 kilometers long, now it's only 100 people there, got a huge amount of sightings. At the most, we recorded or we wrote down in the order of 20 observations a week, and that's quite big. This went on for a long period of time, didn't stop. And then we, a group of us, decided to start to do something with the topic. So it was back in 1983, 1.5 year after the big flap started, that we decided to try to do something. We started what we called Project Hestalen, and we had two field works and a long history with a lot of field works, and I've been part of it the whole time. From my assistant professors, I retired, I must say, last year. So I'm not working at the university anymore. And also the reason why the project test town I'd had running this for together with some friends, not alone, and also together with my students, a lot of help from my students. And when I had retired, I had nothing of that. So, and I found out that we needed some new leadership. And that's where we was lucky, and Fred Paulsen arrived, and he's now the CEO. Very grateful for that.
So tell us about the early days of the project, Fred. So we're going back, like you say, Erling, to 1983, more than four decades now at this point. Technology was very different back then as well, wasn't it? What was the operation like in the early days?
Well, we had some instruments, though. Not so much computer-based system, though, but ordinary instruments, which we used during our first field work, because when we started it back in summer of 1983, the first goal was to plan and run a field work staying up in this valley with instruments and people present. And we had the first field work back in the winter of 1983, well, in January and part of February 1984, we got a lot of result, because at that time there was still a high activity. So we got during that 1 month of operation, I think we got more than 50 sightings, interesting sightings, and also a lot of instrumentation readings, which we wrote down, of course. After that, we cooperated also with scientists, also from the military. Norwegian military was very interested, and they helped us. After that, due to the fact that we managed to get so much different results, both on instruments and also sightings and pictures, we decided to go on for 1 year, second field work, and that took place the winter afterwards in 1985, January mostly, and also part of February 1985, with similar amount of instruments, more people, as up to 40 people participate in the field. But sadly, we got only one really good observation that year compared with more than 50 the years before. So we didn't have any more field works after 1985 until 1993, when the people up there living in the valley wanted to know what had happened with all the measurements we have done. Well, it was nearly gone 8 years since we have done it. They wanted to know what had happened. So I had the presentation for them, went up to the valley, talked with them, talked about all the interest which was growing among scientists around the world. I had been to several conferences, physics conferences, discussed the topic and so on. So there was a growing interest of the topic. Of course, the inhabitants was very pleased to know that. And then I said also, well, now sadly it didn't have any observation anymore, so we decided to not continue our field works. But then what happened after my presentation up in that valley, some people came up to me and say, well, it still continues, they said. Why? Still continues? I haven't heard anything. And they said, no, we don't tell it anymore, because in the first years, first when we told about it, we were so ridiculous in the newspapers and press and everyone, even people around ridiculed them because of what they saw. But they say so, but it still continues. And then I decided, well, maybe we should start it again. And then I call it Project Echelon Part 2. That was back in 94. We had opened with a conference up there. So I gathered a lot of the scientists I had been talking to during the years and asked them to come to Hessdalen and take part in the workshop, we called it. And they did. And very luckily, the press understood that when such scientists come all the way to the small Norwegian valley to discuss the topic, then it must be real. We must stop ridiculing, which I did. And that was a big step, I think.
Can I just ask one thing, Erling? Because this is on my part. What is it we're talking about being reported here and being cited? Because a little peek behind the curtain for the listeners and viewers, we all had a call a few days ago just to talk through some of the project in the background. And I won't jump ahead to hypotheses here, but are we talking UFOs? Are we talking discs? Are we talking light phenomena? What exactly is being reported and studied in those early years?
Yes, that's important. We have got a lot of sightings of different types. We have decided to split them in mainly four different types, which is quite different in observation and how they behave and everything. The first type, type one, is flashes, mostly strong flashes, mostly blue or white, and they're lasting only from a fraction of a second up to a couple of seconds. The second part, or type two, is yellow lights, normally not only ball light, but it can be, the shape is quite different from the different yellow lights, mostly yellow. It also have some other colors sometimes, but mostly yellow lights. They can hover in the valley, down in the valley. We can look down on them for up to a couple of hours, mostly some minutes though, before they disappear. They can be so strong in intensity that they can illuminate the ground beneath them sometimes. And even in the nighttime, when it passes the houses in Hessdalen, people have been waken up because of the light inside the house. It's so strong, the light which is moving outside the house, that it illuminates inside the house as well. These lights, which can last for minutes up to a couple of hours, that's type two. Type three is where you have several lights together. They move together. It seems that they are connected to something because they all move, but they are separate. It looks like separate lights. When this type of light or lights, though, is seen when it's not completely dark outside, people explain it as a black object. It's as if this light is connected to what they call the black object. But mostly when it's completely dark, you see only the lights. That was the third type. The fourth type is more ordinary UFO sightings, or disc shapes, cigar shapes, often seen in the daytime. So it's more what we can call a common UFO sightings. In the beginning, we didn't have so much focus on this type four, due to the fact that they were more seldom. It wasn't so often reported. So when we should focus on the instrument and so on, we had focus on having instruments which could record something light and also in the nighttime.
So you had us, thank you for that summary. You had us up to the mid 90s now, and the people of Hestalen are intrigued as to what happened with this study. The people of Hestalen are still seeing different light phenomena, and they want this study to continue. So what happened in terms of getting things back up and running again?
Well, after the conference, I had the whole presentation, and also the conference I had in Hestalen back in 1994, I decided to use my students to build an automatic station instead of gathering a whole bunch of people going up there for some couple of weeks with instruments. I decided to maybe we should build an automatic station. My students were working on that from 1994 to 1998 when it's good enough to be set in operation. And that's automatic station is what we call now the blue box, and it's still in operation. We had also contact with the scientists which wanted to participate in the valley on fieldworks. So we had cooperation with scientists from Italy, was very strong, involved from 2000 to 2004 or 2005, where they had instruments and people from their institute staying in Hestalen a couple of weeks in the summer times and doing measurements. There's a lot of report from that period, which can be found on the website. The Italian, which was very present, and then we have contact with scientists from France and also Greek, which have done science up in the field. Of course, we have had contact and discussion with several other scientists from other countries, but these scientists actually went up to Hestalen to do something themselves in cooperation with us, though. So that continued. And the next step we did also was to bring young students up there to run what we called science camp, because young students, 15, 16 years old, they were very keen on taking part of what they called some kind of field work. There was being up in the Hestalen Valley for 1 week, together with the teachers, staying up in tents up in the mountain with the instruments and so on. And that was quite popular among the young students because they got sightings, which was very exciting for them, seeing the phenomena in themselves. And the other thing that we got it more accepted into the school system in Norway, that was also important to get the phenomena accepted as a real phenomena. So we had this science camp. We started that in 2002 and had it for nearly every year. I think the last year was in 2019. 2020, we had this COVID, so we couldn't have it. So that stopped it. So science camp is also one part we have done. And of course, when I was working as an assistant professor, I had students which had the opportunity, or they helped me to work with the blue box, set up more instrument, more. But of course, the problem is that I hadn't much funding. So the equipment they was using to build the instruments and so on was all the equipment from the school. So, but now I hope that we are in a new phase. We have which Fred is leading now. We got members paying their fees and also having, if we get funding enough, which we start to get now, we get new instruments, better instruments, much better than we have ever had. So that is a big opportunity, or bigger. When you have better instruments, you get better data.
Thank you for that, Erling. I'm going to give you a break because you've been running the ship at the moment. So we'll bring in Fred because you've brought us up very, very well there to sort of the last, what, year to 18 months. Fred, do you want to come in and tell us a little bit of how you've carried on the work and what the plans are?
Well, I came in when basically Erling was about to retire. And so the first question was, can we get some kind of a membership fee or something like that to get some money? And when we started again, then we decided we have to make this a nonprofit. So that's very important. We're going to ask for money. So I want to tell, like, everything that we get goes to equipment. But of course, then there's a little bit of organization that you have to do. So we set up like the online tools that we needed. We are using Google Workspace for Office. So it's like a proper office environment. I like that because then we have all the tools needed and also the secure disk space. And instead of making a membership database, we just set up an online payment system connected to Discord server. So you go and you sign up for a membership, and it's only like €5 a month. Then you actually get a membership area in the Discord server. So that's kind of what we could offer. And then we're trying to add information for the members, or at least give it early for the members.
Just to add on to that, Fred, Erling mentioned it, or yourself on the call we had, that UFOs equal no funding, basically, because it's one of those topics that I think people appreciate. Well, this is a worldwide phenomenon. Worldwide, there is still various levels of stigma associated with the UFO topic, with the UFO name. So whenever you're trying to do something, regardless of the scientific endeavor or rigor or work involved, you see UFOs, and it can be difficult to acquire any sort of money to do that. Hence why, like you say, this membership system's being invaluable at the moment to try and get more software, more technology up and running to take the project onto that next level.
We're using actually one thing is that we could have used like Patreon on YouTube, but we don't have much videos on YouTube. We try to put out some few from the meetings that we have, but I chose to go for Ko-fi, which basically just buy me a coffee. But then you can also donate. So we managed to get about $5,000 or €5,000. That's 50,000 Norwegian krona. In 2023. So in springtime, we actually bought a pretty nice camera with 8 megapixel, a computer that is able to cope with minus 40 degrees because it has to stay in this blue box.
Very important in Hestalen, yeah.
It is because it will actually get to minus 40 degrees. And so that's what the money has been spent to for now. It took some time before we actually were able to get this up and running. But now we actually had a field trip and conference. And just before that, the cameras were finally installed. It's actually being streamed live on YouTube. And kind of interesting is that they've been able to kind of save all the recording for 1 week at a time.
Yeah.
And then we lose it. So if there is anything that is of interest, we have to find it within that week. every day there's a process that will make stacked images, and I've sent you some, and you can also see it on the website actually now. So these are kind of interesting. This is like 15 minutes at a time, and most of them. And you will see the stars kind of moving in this circle, and you will see if there's like a meteor crossing over. So I'm hoping that we can put these images, they are still in the blue box. So the next goal is to put these images available on the website so you can actually go through them and have get some help from people to see maybe there's something interesting here. So we can take that 15 minutes and go to the video and have a proper look at what happened in that time frame.
And just to let people know, Fred, that on the audio podcast just now, we've got a couple of pictures up on the YouTube feed. So folks on YouTube are just seeing some pictures and overlap. So if you want to check those out, I'll put the link in the description as well, just to skip and see the pictures. Mm-hmm. And also the links for the YouTube channel and the YouTube live streams will be in there as well. I'm not going to lie, I also found it quite nice background imagery to have on my desktop when I've been working. I've had the camera open a couple of times just sitting, and it looks over, like you say, the valley, very picturesque, very beautiful. And if you see anything pop up, you can report it really easily to the guys as well, which really helps out.
Yeah, we have discussions in Discord about pictures. Even before we had these stacked images, people would be watching the live stream and taking pictures and sending it and discussing it on the Discord server. So that's kind of interesting. So, but you can also see it if you go to hessdalen.org, which is H-E-S-S. and then we have actually three buttons. One is web, one is blog, and one is old. And on the old one, this is where Erling has put out all the pictures and videos that he has collected since 1998. And you can go and look at all the interesting pictures and videos on that old site.
I bring some of those up now, Fred? Erling sent me some more pictures previously. If you want me to bring those up. I don't know either Fred or Erling, if you want to talk through some of the images on the screen just now.
Yes, maybe I, the upper left where you see a car driving on the car is a drawing though, and you see that's an illustration, and you see a flying hat above the car, and that's flying hat. Well, the car driver noticed that there was light all around where the car was driving. And there's a place where no street lights or anything like that. It was dark. So I'm wondering, what is the light all around the car? And when she had been driving couple of hundred meters, this flying hat, which had illuminating the car, was flying further into the valley. And then she saw this flying hat. If you look down to the left, you see what we call the flying bread. If you imagine from the bakery a bread form or cigar shape, maybe you should call it, with two lights in front. And that was also seen when dark down in the valley. Well, you see something in the background, that's the trees from the hillside, and that illustration with this flying bread was located just where the woman saw it was flying. It was moving silently, not far away from where she was sitting, and it just disappeared slowly following the valley. To the lower left, you see a drawing or illustration, though, of three flying discs. This hunter, you can see illustration of him. He was hunting in the Hessdalen Valley and looking for birds. It was sunshine, clear weather, no wind. And then he noticed three shadows coming from behind, on the ground, shadows on the ground. And he turned around, looked up to see what it was coming from. Why was these shadows? And he saw these three flying discs, very slowly coming. And then after some seconds, they all three turned on the side with the bottom in front of the moving direction. Because then, just after they have changed to stand on the side, though, with the bottom to the right, and it disappeared very fast. The fourth picture is actually a picture of the real phenomena. There you see the third type, where you have three lights. Well, on that picture, you see only two of them, two yellow. But if you have a bigger picture, you can see, if you see, there is also a red light in front. So there was three lights on that. That was connected to a black object.
What I'll do is I'll move on. There's some more pictures too, Fred. I think probably a good time to talk through these two.
Yes, I can start with the upper left, where you see a light just above the hill you see in the picture. In the background, you cannot see on that picture, but there is also mountain in the background. So this light, this small white light in the picture, that was the first one I saw. So I saw this one too. It made a big impression on me. Lasted for 1.5 hours, moving around, sometimes illuminating the ground beneath it, moving again, slowly stopping and so on. Continued for more than 1.5 hours. And what surprised me when I saw, this was the first, my first sightings, then I knew there is something up here. Not any jokes people are telling. Just disappeared. Just arrived, suddenly it was there. And when it disappeared, it just was away. We didn't see how it disappeared. On the lower left, you see some streak up above this mountain. And that's type one with the flashing light. Sometimes the flashing, you can see they moving also. And also the one to the lower right, you see the blue. I said they are mostly white or blue, there's flashes. Sometimes they're lasting for up to a couple of seconds mostly. And they sometimes move, as in this two pictures, they move. Mostly less than a second, but sometimes up to a couple of seconds. Well, if you go up to the right, though, if you see, look like a hand, human hand, the shape of this type 2 light, yellow light, I said the shape can be very different. Ball light or oval shape or smooth. It's sometimes strange shapes. Well, actually, that picture is taken some minutes after the picture to the left, though. We took several pictures on the light, which you can see on the left, upper left picture, and the one you see to the right is actually the same light, which was taken a little bit later. That's type two.
These pictures you can find on the old site, And there's the whole list, is, like, says pictures, 1998, 1999, 1990, and so on. It goes up. So you can click into that. So because now the blue box is just looking out in one direction. And so that's the goal, to get more eyes in the sky. So my dream is to make a mobile, I call it mobile, anomaly detection system, another kind of a smaller blue box, basically by buying components, buying a camera, putting it together. And yeah, once again, mobile in the sense that maybe 4 or 5 people can carry this up to the mountaintop. That is a solar panel, big battery, a big box where you can put some the equipment inside, and the camera, and some poles, so you can make like a tripod and host it high up. If you put it on a mountaintop, there will normally not be that much snow because it blows away. So if you have it like if you have it 2 meters high, it will not be under the snow. Of course, it has to be steady because it's very windy, but we can make sure that it stays there. So that's my dream, to kind of collect more money for this. And we have now kind of started to make these plans. We managed to get people together in this field trip that we had in September. And that's basically because that's the way it started. It started as a field trip. Mm-hmm. And then the science camp. And after I was fortunate enough to stay in the valley 1 week with Erling, and then we drove back to Oslo. It's about five and a half hour drive from Hestdalen down to Oslo. So we had a lot of time to talk. And he said that a number of the parents of the kids going to the science camp, they asked, can we join? So we thought, okay, let's make another kind of a field trip where grown-ups can join. And then this grew into a conference as well. So actually, what was nice about this is that we had people from 11 countries. We had a student from the University of Würzburg to explain about the system that they are using, because mm-hmm. they have put up 2 4K camera, and they also have a powerful computer with an AI model that is being trained. I think they are using Skycam as a system, and we have on our website some presentation from that student, Marvin. We had Eamon Ansbro from Ireland, and he has a lot of equipment. So we're definitely going to follow up and get some advice from him as how can we do this if we want to build our new mobile anomaly detection system. We had 3 people from Ukraine. There's an office in Ukraine, and they actually get the videos from the military when there's something they don't understand. What is this 125 meter thing just hanging there, mm-hmm. not moving? And then they send it to this office. So they showed a number of videos. But they also build their own equipment. And we also heard that Beatrice from Stockholm is also working on some kind of an anomaly detection system. So she was also presenting. So we have a lot of connections now. Personal connections, and we are planning to kind of see what we can do, and then we are applying for money. There are places where we can ask for money. Ross Colhart has invited the world. If you have projects like this, send in an application. So we're working on that application, crossing our fingers for that. So now the system that we have installed now, I think is called Bob. There are a number of these anomaly detection systems. UFO DAP is another one. Kind of old fashioned, but it's working and it has tracking and everything. This can be installed on any kind of a camera. So it's interesting if we can just place a lot of these, what do you call it? Hunter's camera.
Okay.
Like you want to see, yeah. You know what I mean? Like if you want to see where the moose is running.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You want to place it in those kind of environments and.
Yeah. But if we can put these out many places, that would be nice. It's not that expensive.
Let me ask you, Fred, before, because we're talking about a lot of data, a lot of science, a lot of activity, and we're talking, and Erling mentioned the four types of observations that you pick up, and this phenomena, UFOs, whatever it may be. I appreciate when we spoke before, yourself and Erling are, you don't want to jump to making conclusions on limited data, and that's very scientific, that makes sense, but what sort of hypotheses or what potential, you know, conclusions are we looking at getting towards here? Given what's being seen, we've got over four decades worth of sightings in a quite remote area. What are you starting to work towards being possibilities?
Checking who's going to answer first.
Yeah, Fred, you first, Fred, and then we'll bring in Erling. So go on.
Well, put it this way. I feel when I look at the observations from people, that's where the really interesting part is. The drawings that you saw, where there's this bread is hanging in the air, and this hat is moving over the car, and when you actually go there and talk to the people and they tell you the stories, it's like there is something that is not just a natural phenomena. So of course that's why I really want to have the picture of those phenomena. So now we can catch light phenomena. We can probably be able to, we will probably be able to find out that this is real pictures of the phenomena, but it's still far away. So I want to have pan tilt zoom. The moment we are able to detect it, I want to trace it and have some equipment to really zoom into it. And we have even discussed having a drone to fly in that direction. Because that's what I want to say. So yeah, so you're asking me what do I think it is? I think it is a natural phenomena or a couple of natural phenomena going on that is probably an indication that there is some energy or something of interest in this valley. And something with someone driving with some pilots inside goes there for that reason. That's what I feel.
So Fred, just one more. So on that, do you believe this light phenomena, this energy is attracting potentially whatever may be the more physical objects or UFOs, shall we say? And you think that could be, rather than it all being the same thing, there's like an energy or an attraction happening.
Yeah. One of the reasons I became involved in Hestalen is because, like, you're looking for a UFO, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. But at least here we know where the haystack is.
Yeah.
So it happens again and again. But while I have been working on this, and my phone number is on the webpage, people have been calling me, and I've discussed with people in Discord. And like, okay, this guy, where are you from? Ireland. Okay. And he's showing me that where he saw this UFO is a mountainous area with lots of minerals. And then I have another guy calling me, and he's actually just a little bit south from where I'm living. So okay, what's special about this area? Well, it's a mountainous area with lots of minerals. I even got a phone call from Australia. A guy that had lived in Norway, worked in Norway, but now he moved back home. And he said for 30 years, he had seen all these lights in this area, mountainous area, lots of minerals. So I think there's something of interest.
No, thank you. That's very interesting. And Erling, what about yourself? Decades of data collection, work and research will be going into this answer.
Several interesting happenings during the field trips and research we have done. One thing which I think is very interesting is our recording on radar. We had radar several times up there together with people and cameras and so on. And we have found out that the radar can follow something moving in the valley as if a plane was coming inside the valley. The radar follow it, but we don't see it. Well, of course, the radars do also record what we see, though. But we have several happenings where the radar, only the radar, see it and not ourselves. And we have also stories from people who have seen this coming out from nowhere, as it is materialized. It doesn't come from some place. It just started to be an object slowly in the field. So can it be invisible and still be present, but it's invisible? That's an interesting topic. And if you think of that a little bit more, invisible become visible. And we have also, of course, should mention that we have also recordings of starting with a radar, and then it after radar recordings, 1 hour, suddenly we start to see something together with the radar. And we see something, lights moving around for more than half an hour. And then we stop seeing this, not anything at all, but the radar continue one hour more. So there's something which can be shown on radar without any people. So that bring me into the speculation in how can that become visible. That's an interesting. What makes an object visible compared with non-visible? That's one interesting topic. And of course, you can discuss that further on and maybe explain why we... Well, that will be more speculation, though. I am mostly looking for to get the data first. Another thing which we haven't experienced that much, but in only very few examples, based on the hundreds of observations we have, only a few, but I will mention them anyway. We have experienced what could be a response. On one of those happenings, we directed a weak laser towards the light. And the reason why we did that was that people have use strong spotlights towards this light before, and this moving light, though, which is the phenomena, and they said that it disappeared when they did so. But instead of using a big strong spotlight, we used a smaller laser instead. And what we experienced was there was some kind of response on the laser, and also it was a red laser, and also 1 week later after the test, we did a test 9 times, and 8 of those there was a response. It's explained in my report from 84, but that's also interesting, though. We have also a couple of more similar what could be a response. But of course, that's a very difficult question, because what is it intelligent? What is a response? Could it be something else? So we don't talk about that too much, but I think I could bring it up.
We do have a member that has been pretty open about that he actually saw two creatures that is non-human and not an animal. And in my list, I've actually six cases in Hestdalen where there have been some sightings of creatures. Mm. What I do like about the one that Helge Otterø, and he's on YouTube, in one of the videos I interviewed him, what he saw is two creatures that kind of ran up, crossed the field, crossed the road in front of him, and then continued up the field and into the wood, and he could hear the sheep making sound up there. But when they were crossing, they were kind of looking at him and aware of him, but it was more like they were busy with something and he was disturbing them. Mm. So that's why I kind of feel like if there is somebody there, there's some work they have to do. There's something that they have interest in. And once again, this is, of course, what I need more cameras.
Yes, and this topic where you're talking about something like you explain, Fred, and also what I just mentioned about the possible response, that's one topic itself. And another thing which make it very hard to find one solution is that you have this flying disc observations, cigar shapes observation, which was quite often in the early 80s. But what is this? Is this the same as the flash? You see, if you imagine just a flash of light, blue or white, it's hard to believe that this is something, it's the same thing. It has to be some kind of relation, or but because why does all this happen in a small Norwegian valley only 15 kilometers long, all these different types? But it's very hard for our brain to think of one solution to fit all these four different types. There's so much difference in behavior. And what is the common thing? What do they have in common? That's an interesting thing. We don't have any proof that there is something common other than they all happen in the same place. Fred mentioned that there are minerals in the ground, that we have had investigation of the ground in Hestdalen and found also minerals there as well. A lot of what the geophysicists said is an interesting area, not so usual to see this kind of minerals conducting places in the ground as a cable was down and so on, a magnetical field, such a kind of thing. So there's a lot of minerals in the ground, but it's hard to find. How could these minerals itself make this phenomena, or is there a connection, though? It's easy to think there must be a connection, but it's hard to take a precise conclusion on that, but I think it's more important. It's very important to go on further with measurements.
Mm-hmm. What you do find on the old site, oldhestdalen.org, you can click on English and then articles. And the last one is about what's in the ground. And it's an article from 2024. And the first one on this list, or the very bottom, is the one that Erling was making in 83, 84. It came out in 84. But as you see, it's always been like that's in the spirit of Erling, to put everything out, make everything available. So that's the goal that we want to do. We want to have not only cameras. There's another anomaly detection system called MUPAS from the Experience Studios. And this system has a lot of other instruments measuring all kinds of, if there is a change in the gravitational field, in a microwave, and whatever. There are 9 different instruments on this. And we have one still not installed, but Jim Segala and Carl Crusher is planning to come back in February to install this, and hopefully more than one of this. So once again, and they have actually a portal that you can log into and see if there are any changes, because that's what I want. If I have a picture of something, is there any changes in any of the other instruments?
What I'd like to do to kind of finish off, gents, is get through some listener questions, because I've put out, this is a show people have requested for a few years now for me to talk about Hest Allen on the podcast. So thank you for coming on. And people have been in touch to ask questions of you, gents, as well. So I'd like to get through some of these just to finish up. A question from Terence, who asks, what are some of the most interesting items and sightings you have found and which you would like to look into further? So are there any particular sightings or incidents you think more like that would be fascinating?
There's several different interesting topics. I mentioned a couple of now, but it's very, very difficult to choose one, because to get the whole picture, the real picture, I think we have to take into account mostly all of them, all of those who seems to be the real phenomena.
And just to touch on something you mentioned before, Erling, about the minerals in the ground, is that something you feel is worthy of further study on its own, as something that could be attracting this phenomenon?
Yes, I think the findings of in minerals in the ground is interesting, because maybe that could lead us to the answer on why Hest Allen, because why so much in that small valley in Norway compared with other places around Norway and other places. What's attracting these phenomena? And I think the minerals, so it should be more investigation, I think, in the ground itself, to see if first of all, there is minerals, we have found that now, but how could these minerals influence this phenomena, or attract, or what, call it what you want? That could be interesting.
I'd like to comment a little bit on that, because because we have nice maps of where these minerals are, and that could be a good indication of where to put out sensors and cameras. Because if we think that it is the minerals that is attracting or creating the natural phenomena and the attracting the not natural phenomena, then let's put up the sensors and camera in that area.
But that makes sense. I can understand that. Question from Dave, a couple of questions. Has there been a return trip to the sunken object in Lape? Is it Jupsjön? Am I Jupsjön?
Jupsjön.
Jupsjön. You pronounce that much better than me. And can you just give us a little bit around what was the sunken object in the lake and what's happening there?
This is an operation by a team member, but it's his own operation. What's he called again? So what he first found is that they found out by scanning the bottom where there was something of interest. So in February, they made a hole in the ice and went down to see what it was. And the initial scan indicated something that was like 12, 13 meters long and about 2-3 meters wide. So maybe that it looked like, could it be a rocket? When they went down, it was so muddy. So the moment they started doing anything, it was just like visibility gone. But what they did is two things. They used a knife to try to get some samples, and they have, and they've sent it in to be analyzed. But it's basically mud that has been building up over all these years since 1946 or 47. The other thing they found out is just by using a stick, they could find the outline of this object. And it's as if you have a big car down there. And this is actually more in kind of the original description of what the guy that saw this. I don't remember his name, but he was later the mayor of Røros, the city close to Hesdalen. So he's a trusted witness. But they said that it's like a car in size, like kind of rounded.
Yep.
So they have been down again, and they basically just took more samples to send in. Still, it's difficult to get it lifted up.
Yep.
And it is a private operation. We even asked if we should help trying to get some funding, but this is his project.
That's very fair. So thank you for that. Yeah. Kate asks a question. Do you know, or any of the team know, of any significant sightings in the other Nordic countries such as Sweden and Denmark?
Many in Sweden. I mean, yeah.
Maybe I should make a short comment. There is also several in Norway, not only Hesdalen. But these, what we call UFO flaps, where we have several of in Norway, in different places, normally lasting for maybe 14 days with high activity, people are seeing. What specific with Hesdalen is that it lasts for, well, the high activity lasted from late 1981 to late 1984. So it's 3 years instead of 14 days. And it still continues after the high activity has gone down. But of course, there are several places around in Norway and also probably in other Norwegian countries too, Sweden and Finland and so on. But I don't have any specific details on where the happenings are.
As I mentioned, I do get this email or phone calls from now I would call a friend a bit south of me, and he's taking a lot of pictures. Once again, just by putting out the name, then we get emails and phone calls from people. So even in closer to where Erling is living on the east part, there's someone saying that he's been filming strange lights phenomena near a mountain close to him. So these are just like going on right now, but the UFO Norway has also collected a whole lot of incidents over the years.
Very interesting. Erling, I'll come to you for this next one. Question from Algo. He asks, would you gain new insights by applying modern data analytics to the data you've gathered in the 1980s?
Well, from the 1980s, we didn't. We mainly had handwriting broken down. We have some few data. I think it's hard to use modern equipment on that one to get any more information. I think I would use the work instead of analyzing the old stuff. It would be better to look at the new thing and record the new thing with better instruments. Although I cannot say for sure, of course, but I don't believe there will be so much new information possible to get.
That's fair enough. Question then for both of you from Peter. Are the team aware of any efforts by military and security services, perhaps not just Norwegian, but maybe US, NATO, or even fabled Men in Black type organizations to control or disrupt your investigations?
Maybe I should comment that during our first fieldwork, I mentioned that the military in Norway was very interested and they helped us as well. had a very good relationship. They didn't do anything to stop us. They even, instead, they helped us. So the military was very interesting, and so a very good connection with the military at that time. And I got the impression also that it didn't only happen to Norwegian military. They cooperated with military and other countries, and I heard that the military from other countries as well was interested in the topic, which they should, of course, I think. Yeah.
So very positive then, nothing to state on that one. And that's not something we hear very often, but it's nice to hear where there is a scientific investigation going on without any outside interference, which I suppose is what you want. A question from Jose, or it's Joseph, I think it's Jose. Based on the data that has been collected, have any patterns been noticed, whether relating to characteristics of the phenomenon, mental states before and after encounters, or just any strange details that keep popping up?
Maybe I should make a comment. It's so different, the different types. You have had some, though, but I don't think we could make a general assumption or general thing about the different stories. And that's also one of the different things that is so different description. One interesting thing, I think, is that you have some people who see this and experience this and feel this much more often, much more easy than other people. You have people who don't see it at all and no interest at all. And even if they live in Hesdalen, there is people who have never seen it. And you have some people who see it very often. What is that due to? Is the person itself, is the type of person so different? And also we have had also recording on instruments where people haven't seen anything. So, well, it's an interesting topic as well. I cannot give you an answer on why it is like this.
But I'd like to add that actually the same team member that drives up to Hesdalen so many times a year, this Helge Ottere, he has commented that sometimes he has this feeling of like he doesn't feel comfortable. So, and that same feeling has been reported by others too, that sometimes they feel like there's something in the air in a way, like they don't feel comfortable. So I think we could actually measure like the last one was one that he was up there and he was using his compass and he saw this deviation on the compass, and this is why there's this project that we are they put out a measurement of if there is a change in the magnetic field. But it could be that you feel that. So if we have instruments, then we could also go and check with people if we know there are people in the area.
Yeah. Fred, have you yourself seen a UFO or UAP or had any sort of experience?
In Hesdalen, never.
Outside Hesdalen?
Yeah, well, normally I try to be reluctant, but now I've said it so many times, I better just say it. Back in, and I think this was in 81, 82, I went to this UFO conference in Norway. And at the time, people would go out to get fresh air, meaning get a smoke. I didn't smoke, but that's where the conversation was. And I think it was just like 2-3 kilometers away on the other side of that valley, we saw something that looked like a balloon. It was kind of half behind a tree and with like lights on the bottom part. And we had binoculars so we could see it pretty clear. But it's kind of weird. You're on a UFO conference and then you see a UFO. But what can I say? That's what I saw.
Yeah, it's probably the worst and best place simultaneously to have any kind of UFO sighting, isn't it? Because no one outside the UFO community will ever believe what you've seen at a UFO conference, but you're with the very best people to see it. So
I heard later on that it's actually not uncommon to see during a UFO conference. So, but my kind of not experience, but my grandfather saw many UFOs. So when I was growing up and I was like 5, 6, 7 years and went to visit him, that's what he was telling me all the time. So that's where the initial interest started. But it was just there in the background until last year.
Awesome. Thank you. And final question was similar, but it's to yourself, Erling, because the listeners pointed it towards you. Have you yourself seen a UFO, Erling? And I have to ask you about your boat experience.
Yes, I have seen UFO. That was the reason why I got into the topic. It was when I was a student back in before Hestdalen started. I was a student in Trondheim. And I remember it very well. I was walking home, clear day, sunshine in the middle of the day. And I saw a flying disc with 3 legs beneath it and without any sound. And that made a big impression on me. I could see the details beneath it and so on. It moved not that fast, but I managed. So that made a big impression on me. And that's the reason, main reason why I started all this. I've seen UFO in a way, daylight observation before, but I haven't seen any daylight in that sense in Hestdalen. Well, actually I've seen once in Hestdalen, but I have seen other places too. So, I probably belong to those people who have a little bit more easy to see such phenomena than other places and other people.
And what about the boat experience I have to ask you about?
Did
you have a UFO experience or sighting on a boat?
On a boat? Yes, I have. When I was driving a small boat, not far from where I'm living. It was also sunshine, nice weather. And then I saw on my side view, I was looking that direction, and on my side view, I saw something happening. I thought it was a bird, a big bird coming. But when I looked at it, turned my head towards it, it was a black rectangle type, which changed size. It become big and small, big and small. It was moving slowly in the beginning, big and small, rectangular type. When it was moving away from me slowly, I saw it there and I was moving in that direction. Before it disappeared, I managed to take a picture of it, and I got it on the picture, so I knew it was real. The strange thing, it was black, completely black. But I didn't see any surface on this black thing. It was as if I saw into another universe, or completely black, because if it had been a black object, you should, and you have the sunshine, you should see a structure on the black place, but it was nothing at all. I saw into something emptiness, or as you can imagine, you're out in the nighttime looking at up in the universe, but no stars though, but up in the universe, it was completely black. That was strange.
That's very interesting. Thank you. And to finish off, Fred, I suppose I should bring you in if you want to just remind folks, if they want to get involved, whether that's signing up for memberships, whether it's being on the website, whether it's offering support or services if they're in the area or they plan on traveling to Norway or would like to, how can they do that?
Hestdalen.org. And then I also have events.hestdalen.org. So whenever we have our, like now on Sunday, we're going to have a developer meeting, see if somebody shows up. Because I do try to also bring in developers. So I've made a whole little program as how you can get started doing web pages and deploy this and whatever. Discord.hestdalen.org will bring you straight into the invite. And from there, you can discuss. And you can also meet me there sometimes because I do try to use this Let's Talk channel. And I've had many nice and interesting conversations there. This is actually where I met Jim Segala and Carl Crusher and via this. You can see that on the developer Hestdalen.org, there is some interesting presentations about AI. And this is also a guy that came through Discord. And just recently, I saw there was another one that reached out and said that he wants to participate and help out. So we do have, I think it's on the site. It basically says join. Yeah, that's so you can subscribe and find out. You can become a paying member and you can apply to become a team member. But then we'll have to find out what you're going to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Listen, I'll put all of those links in the description so people can check those out directly. But thank you both for your time and joining me. And folks, make sure you do check out any of those options because this is one of those, you know, worldwide efforts that's going on out in Hestdalen. It's been going on now for decades through Erling and being carried on now through Fred. And they want to continue to expand the scientific effort, collect more data, collect better data, and try and contribute to this kind of worldwide phenomenon. So thank you both for your work. Thank you both for your time. And I'd love to speak to you again down the road.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very nice.
That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show out on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify, just search That UFO Podcast Premium, YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer, a little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right inside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an